listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders. I know firsthand what it is like to struggle, and I found the cure to binge eating. And now I help people all over the world find food freedom. And on this show, I am here for you too. So today we're going to talk about how to crush cravings and feel better with dietitian Cynthia Ray. Let me ask you this. Do you struggle with food cravings, especially sugar? Maybe you're dealing with hormonal changes as well as food issues. You worry you will never get a handle on your weight and with food. And maybe you've been dieting so long, it's hard to know what to eat. You have no idea where to start. Well, you are not alone. And today, Cynthia Ray, RD, is going to give you answers and solutions. So welcome, Cynthia. Let me tell the audience a little bit about you.
Okay.
Cynthia is a registered dietitian and fitness specialist with 20 years of recovery in her own food and body struggles. She teaches women how to heal their relationship with food and discover their capacity to burn fat and rise above the conventional norms of age-related weight gain. She's the author of The 21-Day Sugar Detox, The Fast Track to Crush Cravings, Lose Weight, and Feel Better Now. And by the way, I've known Cynthia so long. We met when I was an intern working in an intensive outpatient program for eating disorders. We totally bonded at that program and we lost touch. We found each other again. It is so good to see you and to reconnect and to have you on the show. So welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you so much. I know I love that we reconnected. It's been so many years and it's so neat that I always talk about how our paths converge, you know, with like we're doing our thing, helping people. Helping women specifically. And just all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're at a place right now. We're writing books. We're speaking. Let's meet up. So yeah, yes. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's a delight. I was at her wedding. That's how long I've known Cynthia. Now she's got teenagers.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So okay. I think it's important for people to hear your story. Tell us about your personal story and how you came to do this work.
Yeah. So, you know, this morning I was actually thinking, like, wow, what's, because I tell my story a lot, but I really wanted to get a full understanding of what was actually happening early in life. And so I have a daughter, she's 9, and I watch her and I see a lot of her in me or me in her. And so it kind of reminded me. So when I was young, I was very introspective. I really had a curious mind. I was always wondering why my poor parents probably got frustrated. And I was kind of a perfectionist and I was very aware of what was going around me. Like I'm very observant. And so because of that, you know, it's a blessing and a curse depending on how you use it. But because of that, I was very aware of what my parents were doing and how they responded to people in the world. And so, you know, like typical, you know, like children do, you know, they modeled the behavior and I went with it and thought, okay, well, if my mom or my parents feel like a thin, beautiful woman is ideal, because they would say, oh, look at that lady. She looks so good. You know, a lot of that. I thought, oh, okay, well, that's what I want to achieve. That's what I want to be. Or lots of, and it was great. I mean, not throwing my parents under the bus, but this is just my perspective. You know, they gave me a lot of affirmation, especially with sports and performance and school and achievement. And so that was a lot of my identity was I'm thin, I'm fit, I'm intelligent, I'm curious. That was really praised, which all sounds amazing. But in my mind, I thought, oh, wow, because my perfectionistic tendency, I need to be those things. And if I'm not that, I don't have identity. That's who I am. So, you know, going through probably early middle school, late elementary school, I was becoming more body aware. Of course, as our bodies change as women, it's normal and natural. I thought, oh man, I'm not that thin and fit little girl that I used to be. So I have to fix this fast because that's who I am. And if I'm not that, I don't matter, right? So I was doing dieting in secret, grabbing my parents' diet manuals from like Weight Watchers or whatever program. And doing it in secret because my mom told me, oh, you're so lucky. You don't ever have to diet. You're you're healthy, you're fit, you're thin, all this stuff, right? So I had to do it in secret so I can maintain that. So I remember my finding my mom's stash of diet manuals and books and following it because I like structure. Following it to a T made me feel really safe. That was a big part of this too, was safety. Safety is a really big factor for my life growing up. So it let me feel safe, gave me some structure, gave me security. And in the hopes that I would maintain who I was by doing that. So anyway, so over the years, I ended up getting more extreme with my eating, and it was more of a safety protective mechanism from the world because of my own fears. And I started restricting more, dieting harder, eating less, seeing how long I could go in a without food, but more of like in a punishing way. So essentially turned into anorexia. And then when I got into college, it continued. I when I got to college, I thought, oh man, I have the freedom for nobody to bother me, asking me all the time, oh, when did you eat? How are you doing? I could do whatever I wanted. So I took advantage of that. And I continued with anorexia, got into exercise addiction. And then when I could no longer hold back from eating anymore, I found myself binging. So binging and purging, discovered purging. I'm like, oh, wow, I could still eat these things and in my mind, you know, feel better. But of course it was a false hope. You know, it was that thing that I thought, oh, I could, the harder I hold on to it, the more I do it, the more I'm going to feel safe. But it actually led me to feel more afraid. So, fortunately, one day I thought, you know what, purging through vomiting and exercise isn't what never on the diet manual. It was never the protocol for dieting. So this is outside. This is a little bit harsh. You know, it's getting hard. So I remember telling my mom one day, it was very hard. And I was like, mom, by the way, I'm in school, but I'm really struggling. So luckily she was super supportive. I went to a counselor at the college and they helped me. Anyway, I ended up going to a treatment program for eating disorders my junior year outpatient program, was able to do school at the same time. It wasn't easy, of course, change isn't easy. And, but I did it and continued my recovery for, I don't know, several years after. You know, it's a process. It's not just stop binging and stop purging. It's everything. So, you know, over the years, continued seeing therapy. I love it. I love all of that world. And told myself in college that I would never treat eating disorders because I was so over it. And it was just like so faux pas, right? But lo and behold, God had other plans for me and completely fell in love with treating other women who are struggling. Because, you know, when you live it, you have a special place in your heart for understanding, especially once you achieve recovery. And not just recovery, but healing, like truly free.
Liberation. That's what I call liberation, right?
Liberation.
Like you're in recovery, but liberation is, hey, you're done. It's behind
you. Completely. Yeah. So that was amazing. But
yeah. So you have had your own history. You know what it's like to struggle. You know how it can go from restricting to binging and purging, all of that. And you also are living proof that, of course, you can totally put it behind you and have that freedom. So let's just dive right into sugar.
Okay.
Let's talk about sugar.
Yeah.
Sugar craving. and by the way, I just want to say, if you are watching the Instagram live right now and you have a question for Cynthia, please just drop it in the comments and we'll get to it as soon as we can. Hi, Laura. Good to see you here. So sugar. A few years ago, I was trick-or-treating with my daughter and a bunch of friends, and we invited like this new family. I didn't know this woman very well, but she came trick-or-treating. Mm-hmm. And as we're walking around, she's like, how can these people allow their kids? She would take her kids' candy. She's like, how can these people allow their kids to trick-or-treating? Don't they realize they're poisoning them? Mm-hmm. Sugar is poison. Sugar is worse than heroin. And she went off on this diatribe about sugar. And I'm thinking like, way to ruin Halloween for the kids, lady. Like, what? But even though she was extreme, that's definitely an attitude that a lot of people have towards sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about sugar cravings and sugar addiction. What is your perspective on sugar?
You know, it's funny. As soon as you said sugar addiction, I kind of cringed inside. I was like, oh, that word. word. It was a trigger word. Well, okay. So let me go back a little bit. So the reason, okay. So when I wrote my book, I have it here, The 21 Day Sugar Detox, I really didn't intend to write a book just like this because of my history with treating women with eating issues. I was teaching them how to get away from an all or nothing lifestyle, right? How to live out with certain foods of your, how to live with certain foods of your life and live out your life to the fullest. Like just how, you know, how to heal your relationship with food overall. So when I wrote that, I was like, man, you know, my writing coach is like, you know, this, people want this, people need this. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to write this, but with the way I teach it. And so, it, you know, it's a sugar detox, of course, for 21 days, the idea is to get rid of sugar for the 21 days, but essentially just to hit the reset button to say, okay, let me take a pause on this. Let me take a step back. Let me look inside myself and see what I'm really needing more of or what I'm struggling with when it comes to sugar so I can heal myself emotionally and physically. And then when I'm done with the 21 days, then come back to it and see how I'm doing. So anyway, I just want to share that piece before I dive in. Okay, so sugar craving. So for me, what I really believe is with sugar cravings, that there's multifaceted, right? We're not just physical beings. We're also emotional and we have a soul and a spirit. So all of these, I treat everybody from a holistic perspective, from an all of the person, right? So physical. So in the physical aspect of sugar, there are some things that are complications. So of course there's tooth decay. We hear about that, especially with children. Also with feeding unhealthy gut bacteria, unhealthy gut bacteria prefer sugar. That's their fuel of choice. So typically when people crave sugar for prolonged periods of time, or it's really hard to get out of, a lot of times it's because the gut bacteria are actually trying to stay alive and they're causing you to crave sugar for their life. Our bodies are wired for survival. But taking sugar out will actually kill it because whatever you don't feed will die, right? So one of the things could be also candida fungus, or just unhealthy gut bacteria. Candida is another common one. We have candida fungus in our gut naturally, but when we have an overgrowth of it, it causes complications in your health, digestion, a lot of bloating, gas, low energy and fatigue. So those are a couple of things you want to look for. You can visit, usually our natural healthcare practitioner can test us for those things. Or just look out, you know, for somebody who could do that if you want to be tested. So the other aspect for physical is it also triggers, you know, brain chemicals. So food is a drug. There's an aspect of food that has a drug effect. So for example, it can, yeah,
all
go ahead.
Food, right. It's not just like all food affects our brains. It's not just sugar, right? It's
exactly. Yeah, exactly. Food. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. All different. Yeah. Different kinds of food do different things, but specifically sugar. There's a aspect of sugar that causes a, what's it called? Like a reward center, I guess you would say. So when you eat something sweet, whether it's a piece of fruit or refined sugar or anything sweet, there's an elevation in serotonin and it makes you feel really good and makes you feel happy, even to the point of making you feel just kind of calm, especially if you're anxious. So it also affects dopamine, and dopamine is also the reward center. And also, but it gives you a sense of pleasure, a sense of like, oh, that felt really good. And you want it again, right? And then the other one it affects is oxytocin. So oxytocin is another brain chemical. That's that one where you just, you know, you get a hug and you just feel so comforted and so close and so reassured by somebody. Sometimes people say, like I've seen on coffee mugs, it says hug in a mug, which obviously not sugar, but people feel that way about comfort food, right? So that oxytocin release is like, just like that bonding effect. So those are some of the things. And then also with, unfortunately, when you eat sugar, it becomes cyclical as far as appetite. So the more you have, the more you want because of all these things I'm describing, feeding your unhealthy gut bacteria and candida, elevating these neurotransmitter hormones, and then also elevating hunger hormones. So when you're eating sugar, your ghrelin is your hunger hormone. That's the one when your stomach growls, ghrelin is elevated. So when you eat more sugar, the hunger hormone is actually elevated, making you hungry more often. At the same time, sugar decreases leptin and another hormone called CCK. Leptin and CCK are responsible for satiety. So if you are feeling like you're craving sugar, and you're just going to get more hungry and less satisfied. So carbohydrates in general, unless it has a lot of fiber, sugar, what have you, actually elevates ghrelin, your hunger hormone, and they also do not trigger your satiety hormone. So a lot of people say, oh, you know, we joke at in our house, oh, there's always room for dessert, right? Because you could eat, just going to throw this example out there, you could eat, you know, a big fat piece of chocolate cake. It's, I don't know, let's say 500 calories. And you can also eat a bowl of chicken that's 500 calories. The bowl of chicken is going to make you much more full, right, and satisfied than the piece of chocolate cake, typically. That's because those hormones aren't being stimulated for satiety when you're done eating. So, yeah. Let's see what else. Yeah. So yeah, dopamine, you know, a lot of times too, if you are low naturally, you know, just chemically, if you're low on serotonin, low on dopamine, low on oxytocin, a lot of times people will go to sugar to as a medicine, really, to self-medicate to help to get those back in balance naturally, right? Because that's our body's wired to survive. So we'll do what we can to make that happen. So yeah. Go ahead.
What happens then if you go, the idea behind your 21 day sugar detox is mm-hmm. that you stop eating sugar and you get more in balance in all of these ways. But then what happens when you start eating it again?
Right. So that's my next point. Good question. So yeah. So in the very last chapter, in chapter 21, I talk about how to reintroduce sugar. So I know there's some people out there, we were talking about this earlier, who really feel at this point in their life that if they have any sugar, it's going to trigger them and they just cannot eat sugar. I have plenty of clients who feel this way in my group and private practice. And if that's you at this point in your life, that's okay. But you have to know too that there's usually more involved at a deeper level. So, but if you do want to reintroduce sugar into your life, that's fine. And because I have a firm belief that food in general is about more than just nutrition. It's about bonding, making connections with people, creating memories, celebrations. And it's really important to be able to allow yourself that opportunity to share those moments with people. Usually there's sweets around, right? Which is fine. So if you want to bring sugar back into your life, what I say is 80-20. This is kind of my general rule of thumb, 80-20. 80% of your diet being whole, healthy food that's going to nourish you, that's going to give you your best health. And then the 20% is other. So that's other food that doesn't necessarily fit in the healthy food category, but it's enjoyable to allow yourself to enjoy that 20% of the time. So the way that looks like specifically is if you want something sweet and you want something special, or you want something sweet, make sure to make it something absolutely valuable and special. Like if, let's say you're at work and somebody brought donuts or somebody left cookies, you know, in the communal kitchen area. If that's what you really want and that's the one that you really love, then go for it, enjoy it, eat it mindfully, savor it, all the things, sit with it and eat it. But if you're just kind of mindlessly eating and just kind of grabbing it because it's there, have a plan in advance and think, okay, I'm only going to eat something sweet when it really has a lot of value. Like this is what I really want to treat myself to, or I'm going on a date night with my husband and I really love when we have a glass of wine together and share the specific dessert. So save your sweet treat opportunities for times when it really feels good and is important and you can give it your full attention.
That's so in line with my one food rule. I only have one and it has to be yummy.
Yeah. Yes. It has to be.
And some people say, yeah. Wow, you know what? I went to the faculty lounge and I had a mm-hmm. bite of cookie and I realized it actually wasn't that yummy.
Yes.
Not to belabor the whole sugar thing, but I can imagine that someone is listening to this or watching this and they're thinking, oh yeah, but no, if I eat like if I have a packet of Oreos, mm-hmm. I can't just eat two of them. And I can't have that packet of Oreos in my pantry. Like, I'm just going to want to have all of them. I'm addicted to Oreos. How do I stop? Mm-hmm. It's either all or nothing. How do you guide someone who has that dichotomous black or white? I can't stop. May know that there's no such thing as food addiction, but may feel like a food addict.
Yeah. Yeah. So honestly, okay, if this person came in my life, which has happened several times, if they really feel like this is their thing, I don't know how much I could say unless they asked for help. Then, oh, okay, that's interesting. Honestly, right? So that's, I think we kind of get that part, right? But if that person at the same time said, I said, okay, I would say actually, okay, that's interesting. If that's what's working for you, you know, it's hurt the person's truth, right? But if the person said that same thing, but then came back and said, I'm really struggling with this, what can I do? Then I would say, okay, well, I would explain all of these things. Okay, well, if you want to talk about diet now, but I kind of roll into that. But if you, you know, change your diet to be a little bit more higher in fat, healthy fats, moderate in protein, healthy protein, clean protein, and lower on the carbohydrate end, you'll be able to balance your blood sugar more steadily so that you're not craving the highs, you know, having the highs and lows of blood sugar and craving sugar more often. Plus the higher fats and proteins, like I said earlier, stimulate the satisfaction hormone and keep the ghrelin, the hunger hormone, at bay. So your energy's good, your energy's stable, your mood is pretty stable. You don't go through the highs and lows of energy throughout the day. You just feel good overall. So I would probably start just from a practical perspective, guiding somebody with their general day-to-day diet and just experiment. Say, okay, give this a go, experiment with it. You know, with an experiment, there's possible failure, there's possible success or whatever that looks like to you and everything in between. Experiment with that. See how that feels for you. See if you notice any decrease in cravings. And then we'll go to the next step, which would be looking at emotions, like emotional needs or physical issues like gut health issues or hormonal imbalances as well. Those are other factors that are involved too.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, in my experience, obviously as a psychoanalyst treating eating disorders, it's more of a hungry heart that leads people to binge on a whole box of Oreos and also about deprivation, which is one of the things that I appreciate about your 80-20 solution is because as we know, deprivation leads to wanting what you can't have. And that's the diet binge cycle. So eliminating that sense of deprivation can take away one aspect of binge eating. Not the emotional, but just the depriving part.
Yes, yes. And I have that on my list of things I wanted to share. But yeah, exactly. So, you know, people tend to crave sugar too because of that. Like if you're dieting too hard, I just was thinking about myself when I was craving sugar like crazy because I was dieting too hard. I wasn't allowing myself. And it wasn't just the physical allowing, it was the emotional, mental allowing. Like, I just can't do this because if I do this, it'll make me fat and being fat will make me unacceptable. So it wasn't the food, it was right how I was feeling about what it was going to do to me that would change my character. So
it's never one thing or another thing, right? It's both. We have brains and minds and emotions, and we have to attend to all of them. Okay, so I have another question.
Okay.
And that involves, you treat a lot of people who are maybe perimenopausal, menopausal, let's say people have really gotten a handle on eating. They're not emotionally eating. They're eating in a healthy way. But then menopause or perimenopause hits and everything goes, wah! The rules no longer apply. And it's like, what the person said, she's like, I can literally watch the fat move from my thighs to my stomach.
Wow.
Like,
yeah.
Well, how should people adjust their eating for these kind of this life transition that a lot of people put themselves in?
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, it's funny. So I'm 47 this week. And so prior to 40, I would just eat clean and do my mindful eating and all that stuff. And it was fantastic. And it was great. It was really freeing. I was living my recovery. But then over 40, it wasn't the same. Like, yeah, things were shifting, body fat was accumulating. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. So no, I totally get it. But what I found though, is I became more interested in understanding hormonal changes for women as we age, of course. So I came to understand that when it comes to like fat distribution, like, you know, whether it's on your abdomen or your thighs, really is about the hormone imbalance. So for example, abdominal fat gain is typically an indicator of estrogen going down, right? So when estrogen goes down, testosterone goes up, which is interesting. So because the concentrations change, right? So estrogen's down, testosterone's going up. We all have testosterone as females, just not as prominent as estrogen and progesterone. So anyway, so that's going down, testosterone goes up. And because testosterone's going up, we begin accumulating more body fat in our abdomen, which is interesting. And, you know, kind of men, they kind of have that fat distribution where it's more abdominal than, you know, in hips and things like that and thighs. So that typically begins to happen. Also, with decreased estrogen, you actually get an increase of ghrelin, that hunger hormone I was mentioning earlier. That hunger stimulating hormone actually also goes up with decreased estrogen levels. So we end up a little bit more hungry. And usually with increased ghrelin, we want to go for whatever's quick and easy, because when you're really hungry, usually carbohydrates are a quick, easy snack. And because that's happening, when carbohydrate intake goes up that much, it's putting an effect on insulin. So I'm throwing all these names of different hormones, but this is how this all works. So insulin, we hear about a lot with diabetics, right? We all have insulin, of course. Our pancreas produces insulin. And what it does is it takes the sugar or carbohydrate that's in our blood and helps it to go into our cells for energy. So typically as women age, as well as estrogen and progesterone go down, women become a little bit more insulin resistant. And insulin resistance is basically like pre-diabetes, where the insulin that you have when the carbohydrates are coming in, they're not really doing its job to help the carbs get into your cell for energy. It ends up circulating just like with a diabetic. So when that happens, you also see an increase in body fat gain as well. So if you're able to find a great way to bring estrogen up, bring lowering progesterone up as you age, then you can have balanced insulin and then also decrease body fat composition. So I have some really cool foods that I've recently discovered that you can eat that will naturally elevate estrogen and progesterone. So actually I have my little list here. So if you think of it, when we go into perimenopause or full menopause or even postmenopause, when you feel like, you know, postmenopause mainly, when you feel like your hormones are gone, like there's no more progesterone, there's no more estrogen, that's not necessarily the case, especially during menopause itself. But when you're in those phases, your hormones are low, but they're not totally gone. They're just a little bit stagnant, right? So they're there. So, but what you can do, especially for women who have gone into early menopause, usually before 50, there's foods that you can eat for any of these women that'll help to elevate those levels naturally. So I have my little list here, but for example, to elevate estrogen, you eat foods that are really like lean proteins, healthy fats, what they're called, probiotic foods like kefir, sauerkraut, kimchi. Those are really good for your gut health, but also for elevating estrogen. Some of the progesterone forming foods are more of the starchy foods. So red potatoes, sweet potatoes, other root vegetables like beets. You can also do squashes, broccoli, cauliflower. I have a whole list and I can share that at some point, but those are all those foods that if you start eating those a little bit more often will naturally elevate estrogen and progesterone levels, even if you feel like they're non-existent. I've even seen women that I've worked with in my practice who hit menopause early, maybe like in the early 40s or even mid 40s. And there's a little phenomenon right now. I actually have a book about it. It's called the rushing women syndrome. And the rushing women syndrome is basically women who are rushing around a lot, right? So we're high high energy, red,
rushing type woman,
type A, like, and I'm like, this is all me, right? Type A, all getting everything done. Yeah. So, okay,
what is a rushing woman to do?
That's what I was going to just tell you. So, okay. So rushing woman syndrome, right? So we're stressed out. We have a lot going on. We are moms, we're professionals, we're all the things, right? We're all the hats. And what you can do, I've seen this, it's amazing, that just honestly, just increasing these progesterone and estrogen forming foods, even if you lost your period earlier than planned or normally healthy, eating these foods bring a period back, a cycle, a full cycle back, even if it's spotty. But that's good, obviously, right? Because that's showing us that our body is elevating those hormones again and bringing them back to where they need to be. But of course, you know, rushing women, the main culprit is cortisol, right? So that stress hormone, that's that fight or flight hormone that keeps you going, or once you're going and you're always ready to like run or fight and your heartbeat's racing. That in itself, if you have cortisol going, like you're ramped up, you're stressed out and you're sitting, that's probably the worst thing you can do with cortisol, because cortisol in itself in our design is designed to make you move, right? Either to run away from the lion or get after it and kill it, right? So fight or flight. So if some, let's say you're sitting at your computer and all of a sudden you get this crazy email that stresses you out and you're like, oh my gosh. And like, you're have to get something done real quick, but you're sitting and your heart's pounding, that actually elevates cortisol and will lead to accumulation of body fat because it affects insulin as well. So a little aside here, I talked about insulin earlier. When insulin goes up frequently, it triggers a hormonal response in your body to store extra body fat. That's what it's saying to do. So that's why I was saying moderate fat or high fat diet, moderate protein, lower on the carbohydrate end will keep you lean and healthy and fit and your hormones balanced. But constantly triggering insulin with carbohydrates is telling your body, okay, I have enough now. Once your body stores are all filled up, if you continue doing that with your insulin, then your body's like, I have nowhere else to store this. What do I do with it? Oh, it's we need this because there may be a famine, or maybe there's something happening for fight or flight. Like, I need that. So it's, again, we're wired for survival. It's amazing. Okay. So for rushing women, so for cortisol, what I tell my clients to do in my group, is we do it on the spot stress relievers. So lots of different things. If you're at your desk and, or in your office and you can't necessarily run, go for a run to get it going. I just tell them, you know, if you close your door, get on the floor, do knee push-ups on your knees, just some hard exercise repeatedly to match the heart rate that your fight or flight heart rate's getting to. So to utilize that cortisol in the moment is what exactly what your body needs right then. So that'll really help when it comes to on the spot stress and then weight management as well.
Super helpful. So much information. You are a wealth of information. Yeah.
Thank okay. you. Thank you.
Okay. So okay. Let me also think about another question or another comment that I hear a lot. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Donna Beth, I'm so glad you started reading my book. Welcome. Welcome to the show. If you have any question or you or anyone else here on Instagram has a question for Cynthia, just drop it in the comment box and we'll get to it. So here's my next question, which is someone who's been dieting their entire life. Like I hear from people who've been like, I went on my first diet when I was, you know, 8 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old, and I've been dieting for decades. Mm-hmm. And they have no idea how to eat. Like, or they hear like, just eat intuitively. And they have no idea what that means. It's like, what do you mean? Like, listen to my body. My body's going to tell me to eat pizza. What are you saying? You know, so like, what do you tell people who just have been in that diet mentality? Mm-hmm. Restrictive, of course, and that diet mentality, eat this, but not that. Mm. And now they have to kind of figure out for themselves how to eat and more importantly, what to eat.
Right. Yeah. So that's because I've lived it. As soon as you started saying that, I was like, oh, I have compassion because I know what it's like to be in that place and to be confused. And even when I was in my, my own treatment program, there wasn't somebody who helped with nutrition specifically. It was just a few therapists who were fantastic, who also lived this out, but never taught us about nutrition except for eating mindfully and intuitively. And also just a little background too. For years, I, as a dietitian treating eating disorders, I was, you know, of course, anti-diet. I still am. But it was hard because, to find that balance between showing them how to eat and telling them what to eat. Right. So like living out an example, or do they want to live on a meal plan? Like as a dietitian, it's hard with recovery because they want to be told exactly what to eat. And usually at the beginning, that's fine. Because they just need something to hold on to feel safe and secure with. So I'll do that. But the thing is, if I'm not answering your question, let me know, but I'm just kind of going on a little, my brainstorm. But when you get to the place with, okay, this is what you should eat, how much you should eat. Honestly, what I'm learning more lately is that if somebody says, let's say it's me as a dietitian, they say, okay, I don't know how to eat. I'm gaining weight. What do I do? And usually what I had done in the past is, in order to help them lose weight, I would, in my back office, calculate how many calories they need for deficit, you know, to start losing weight, and then give them a really healthy meal plan, teach them about mindful eating, and intuitive eating. But I wouldn't talk about calories, which is fine, right? It works and it's fine. But I knew what I was giving them. And what I noticed was that over time, they would, you know, follow the meal plan, very good about it. And then our next session, whatever, 2 or 3 weeks later, come back, I'm not losing weight. I'm like, oh no, what am I doing wrong? But what I recently learned is that another reason why restrictive calorie dieting doesn't work. And this is actually cropping up right now in research, and it's starting to become a new thing. So you might be hearing this first, but the truth is that weight loss or body fat loss is not about calories. Because when you eat, let's say I'm as a dietitian, I'm like, okay, you need whatever, 1500 calories to start losing a couple pounds a week of body fat or weight. If I said, you know, that many calories, somebody does it. The amazing thing about our bodies, again, we're wired to survive, is our basal metabolic rate will also decrease to match the amount of energy that we're taking in. So it always matches it. There's never really a deficit. We're always, even no matter how low you go, your body will do whatever it can to match whatever energy you need, you're getting, because of whatever is happening in the environment. Your body wants to survive. So it would be helpful to know, especially for people who are wanting to know what to eat, that honestly, if you're wanting to lose weight, which is okay, you know, if that's what you're needing in a healthy way, but it's the composition of your food that really takes precedent. So again, like I mentioned earlier, in order to balance blood sugar, you know, the higher healthy fat, moderate protein, lower on the healthy nature's carb end, lower on that end, will help with body fat loss, but also has all those health benefits, you know, helps you to, like, again, have great energy, amazing brain clarity. It's crazy how, because our brain is fat. His brain is made of primarily of fat, and it needs it for fuel. And then also, so higher fat, moderate protein. So the protein obviously is helpful for your structure. And then we have lower on the carbohydrate end, which is just giving you the energy and the nutrients you need and minerals you need from those carbohydrate sources without taking them out completely. Because when there's a fear about food, for example, I know lately carbohydrates are the enemy, whether it's sugar or bread or whatever. When there's fear around that, it's like, forget, I'm not going to eat them at all. Because if I eat one, I'm going to gain a ton of weight. But the thing is, it's really the type of carbohydrates you're eating. If you're eating a lot of salty processed carbs, you probably will retain water just because that's the nature of it. Our body's going to respond. You may actually have gas and bloating because the bacteria in your gut aren't happy. They're responding in a negative way. So, but if you're getting carbohydrates from nature's carbohydrates, so from plants, from veggies, from fruits, things like that, or root vegetables, you have better blood sugar balance. But it's also giving you the minerals and the proper bacteria that your body needs to function in its prime.
That's very helpful. And okay. And we have a question right now, but first I want to just clarify one thing. So what you're saying is actually maybe figuring out your macros, like this many protein macros, this many carb macros, and this many fat macros, and just finding a way to hit those macros in as healthy a way as possible is the way to go, because otherwise you will lower your metabolism will lower in response to your lowered intake of calories. And of course, then it, not only do you not lose weight or as much weight, but then as soon as you start eating in a more normal way, you gain weight more easily.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, speaking of macros, do you want me to just share a little bit about that, so there's more practical application?
Yes. The question, I don't know if it's actually more of a psychology question. What's the difference between healthy eating and orthorexia? I mean, I wrote a lot about orthorexia in my book, Food for Thought. I know you have it. The person who asked the question, you know, and it's an extreme, but if we have time, we'll answer that. But yes, Cynthia, I think it would be really helpful to answer. So someone needs to know how, you know, okay, I need to do macros, but how many macros? How much protein? How many carbs? How much fat?
Right. I know, right? Yeah. So as soon as I hear that, I hear numbers, right? Somebody wants numbers. And numbers can be really great and numbers can be really not great, depending on the person. So let's say I said, okay, I'll just give you numbers and then I'll go from there. Okay. So for macronutrients, I would say about 65 to 70% of your diet on the healthy fat end. Okay, so healthy fats are avocado, olives, olive oil, clarified butter. I can't think of what it's called right now. Ghee, there we go. Ghee, nut butters without added sugar, coconut oil, MCT oil. So there's a variety of healthy fats that you can choose from that'll really be helpful. So when it comes to healthy fats, I know it's a larger amount. Usually it's like, especially what we've been hearing over the years about diet and health, it's like, oh, not all the fats, you know, that's too many calories. And that can be very scary. But if you understand how metabolism works, you know, it's funny, I actually went back to my nutrition book and metabolism book from college from years ago, just to see what actually is happening in our bodies. And it came true. The same things that people are starting to teach again now is that, because I said it's not about calories, but it is about insulin. As I mentioned that earlier. So if you're taxing insulin a lot, you're going to store body fat. That's how our bodies work. But if you're eating a higher healthy fat diet, it has very minimal to no effect on your insulin, but it gives you the nutrients and the energy that your body needs for health and longevity. Okay. So calories, it sounds so strange. I know people think, oh man, that's so much fat. That's so many calories, but trust me, this is new, and you're going to be telling everybody when you start doing it and you're like, wow, I feel really good. You're going to keep your blood sugar stable and you're going to keep your body fat stores low. Okay. So that's for higher fat. Moderate protein. We need, like I said, we need protein mainly for our body structure and for our healthy function of our blood and also our immune system. So it's important to have enough protein in. So for protein, I would say probably 70-80, about 20% of your 20 to 30% of your diet protein, healthy sources of protein, whether you're, if you're vegan or vegetarian or a carnivore, any protein sources will be helpful. But if you are a vegan or vegetarian, to make sure to have your plant proteins like lentils and beans with a starch like rice to get the complete amino acid profile that you can only get from animal sources. So you can do that. And then as far as carbohydrates go, I would say limit it. You know, it sounds low, but about 10 to 15%. It's enough to give you the nutrients that your body needs and to keep your blood sugar stable. Again, not taking out carbs at all altogether, because that's not healthy either, right? We need them. They're necessary. So those are the main things, and especially for weight management as well.
And isn't there I forget, it has like six syllables, and it's the process by which our bodies convert anything, even protein, into carbs.
Oh, gluconeogenesis?
That's it.
Yeah.
Gluconeogenesis. I love saying it. Gluconeogenesis.
Isn't it cool? I know. Oh, and actually, speaking of that real quick, as you're talking about gluconeogenesis. So gluconeogenesis is how your body converts protein to carbohydrate. So fats cannot be converted to carbohydrate. There's no metabolic system that can convert fats to carbohydrate. They're just an energy source and nutrients. Carbohydrates, of course, are carbohydrates, so you don't have to do any converting. Protein eaten in excess because of gluconeogenesis can convert into carbohydrate energy, elevate your insulin levels, and be stored as fat. If you're like eating just protein and veggies, it isn't necessarily the best recipe for weight management for that reason.
Yeah. So there's so much misinformation out there because I know a lot of people who are just like, I never eat anything with a carb. I only eat a vegetable carbs and protein, and that's it. And it's just like, it's back to the basics of balance. Now, we only have about 5 more minutes. I don't know if you have an answer regarding what is the difference between healthy eating and orthorexia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just living it out, I could describe from my perspective. Then if you want to explain more later, you probably could. But as far as orthorexia goes, that's kind of like, it's like extreme dieting. So you're living, it's not for me. It's not about the behavior. It's like how you feel inside. It's like your emotions. That's like, there's so much stress. There's so much fear around eating differently because there's such a sense of control and safety when you're controlling your food or limiting your food intake to either by calories or by nutrients, or even, I know like right now I haven't talked about it yet at all, but with a fasting lifestyle, fasting is so popularized these days, but any of those diet rules or restrictions that you take and you do them to the extreme, you're not living your life. You're living in, I call it like slavery or bondage, right? So you can't allow yourself to do things. And I wonder how that translates into other areas of your life. Like, is there that tight of boundaries where you're not letting people in or allowing yourself to have connections with people that you actually need more of in your life so you can have more freedom with food and life in general? So and that's kind of my perspective. And healthy eating is having the freedom to have connections and bond with people and to feel secure and safe in your body. And a lot of times too, it has to do with the information that you know and the misinformation that you get. So if you think that somebody said I'm supposed to eat 1200 calories and you're strict on that, but the truth is it doesn't work. It gets confusing because what you're doing isn't working. But it's sometimes just a lack of education as well with orthorexia because they don't really know what their goal is or what they're trying to achieve. It's just a very emotional thing.
Orthorexia, mm-hmm. it's not a, I know we're going a little tangent, so really quickly, because I also want you to tell people like how they can find you and all that. But orthorexia is really, and it's such an extreme, and it's almost, it becomes almost like a delusional way of being in relationship with food. And it constricts your life so much, as you were saying, and it's really psychologically, it's about like not wanting to be messy, like you feel messy inside, that becomes clean eating taken to an extreme, obsessive, and it becomes it takes on a life of its own. And to your point, Cynthia, it makes people not be able to live their lives. Healthy eating is freedom, right? It's not being afraid of getting back to sugar in the beginning of our conversation, not being afraid of sugar or anything.
Yeah, it's just really avoiding the extremes. That's one thing I want to point out before I go, is it's really avoiding those extremes. If that's any tip I can give you, is to understand, like, we can't do 100% of everything 100% of the time. We're going to set ourselves up for failure. But if you can do 80%, because you're wanting to nurture and you nurture your body to health and be the best you that you can be, 80% of the time, and then 20% of the time also get fulfillment from having connection, food connections with other people and vacations and so on. That's true freedom for me.
Yeah. And what I like about your attitude is that it's not just, well, just eat, you know, just eat enough to just eat enough to live, like just get your nutrients. And you're recognizing that food is supposed to be enjoyed. It's part of the connection. It's part of connection. It's part of community. And I love that message, and to just feel safer with ourselves and with food is that's true food freedom. Mm-hmm. So, Cynthia, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah.
Please tell people how, put up your book again.
Okay. Hang on, let me get there. Oh, wait.
please tell people, yes, the 21-day sugar detox by Cynthia Ray, available on Amazon. Please tell people how they can reach.
Okay, so super easy. My website, it's on here, cynthiaray.com. It's like the hub for everything. You can find where to order my book from there. You can also, if you can also go to 21dayswithoutsugar.com. That's actually just my book website. So 21dayswithoutsugar.com. But on my main website, cynthiaray.com, I have my book is there. If you want to work with me one-on-one, that's there. I have a program, an online program for women over 40 who want to learn all these things about balancing hormones. I provide a meal plan, fitness plan, group support, community support, one-on-one. So it's a whole group of women of community that come together to learn from me and to live their best life as they age. So,
and I'll also have all these links in the details about the show. So thank you again. Thank you so much for
You're welcome.
Sharing your knowledge. And I love that 80-20 rule and all the amazing information that you gave to us. Really, really appreciate it, Cynthia. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Awesome. Thank you.
And that is our show for today. I will be back here next week. I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. Stay curious, not critical. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.